You're listening to PX Pulse, a regular podcast bringing you fresh voices on critical issues facing HIV prevention research today.
As we close out 2018 and look to the year ahead, PX Pulse is taking up a question prevalent on many people's minds these days: how clinical trials will need to be designed as HIV prevention evolves, and how to strengthen community engagement along with it. PX Pulse started talking about this back in October 2017 with a look at the double-dummy, double-blind trial designs of injectable PrEP. Discussions have continued since then. Recently, the field heard some of the latest thinking on future trial design at the HIV Research for Prevention Conference in October. In this episode, PX Pulse only touches briefly on the very complex technical features of some of these designs, but we're delving more deeply into very important questions of community input into this issue. Three strong advocate voices are here today to trade ideas about how to respond to ongoing issues with community engagement and new ones that are emerging as the field explores the next generation of trial design. Marenike Giwa-Onaiwu heads up the Houston HIV Cross-Network Community Advisory Board. Stacey Hanna is AVAC's Director of Research Engagement. And Jeremiah Johnson of the Treatment Action Group is their HIV Project Director. Stacey, there's a new call for community input into the discussion about how and why trial design will change. As an advocate, what are your first thoughts about this?
I would just make a call for coordination. Because of how complex this is going to be to really get true, meaningful community input, it's important that our field comes to a common strategy on all of this. Let's really think about what questions need to be answered and make strategic, concerted effort to develop a process. This can't be a one-off thing. That's just not going to work.
So a lot to be gained by giving this full attention right now. And let's remember, community engagement involves many stakeholders with different perspectives. There's been a lot of work to make engagement effective, and it's going to really need to step up to address the complexity of future trials. Marenike, in your view, how is community engagement doing right now?
One thought that immediately comes to mind is that there's still a lot of lack of clarity in terms of what we mean by community engagement. So we have certain segments of our community that are well-versed in scientific matters and that are integrated well into the system in terms of providing input. And then there's a lot of people who aren't aware of the research that's happening, aren't engaged except in a peripheral manner. And so a lot of the most vulnerable parts of our community, people with multiple marginalizations, are not necessarily engaged as effectively as they could be. And so we miss a lot from the conversation because it's more siloed than it would be ideally.
Jeremiah, what do you think?
You know, I have a lot of questions about the depth and the breadth of that community engagement. Just even the word engagement sometimes, you know, we really need community leadership on these issues going forward. We need to sort of up the ante on it. And particularly as these ethical issues start to expand in a post-oral PrEP era, and as new modalities come online, the urgency around that is going to grow.
Stacey?
Just to give a very generic example, oftentimes you hear that the CABs or community members or advocates or name your stakeholder needs to review a protocol or review a trial before it can start in the community. Well, first of all, if you give, again, for instance, a CAB member, like I was saying, someone who's not a researcher, someone who doesn't do this day in and day out as a full-time paid job, however long, 100-page protocol, it's hard to say what effective input is going to come from that. But I think a lot of times that becomes a very ineffective form of engagement. But oftentimes, I think really is this box that has to get checked to kind of fulfill this idea of we've engaged the community in this trial.
And just a reminder, a CAB is a community advisory board, and it's one of the main vehicles that community input comes through. So let me ask you all, what are some examples of a community engagement process that just was not what you wanted to see?
Well, you know, the one that I was most directly involved with comes from the Discover trial, Gilead's trial to look at TAF-FTC potentially as another oral PrEP. In that incident, a lot of community members were engaged by Gilead, but it felt like in a very cursory sort of way. It felt very much like we want a rubber stamp. We want to check that community box. After having these sort of preliminary discussions, the protocol was released. The trial was sort of pushed forward very quickly, and community members were very concerned, and we started to actually see materials from certain trial sites that made it sound like it was a PrEP access trial. And so community members had to really scale up, and there was a call from a number of community members to halt the Discover trial until these things were worked out. And Gilead did make concessions around the trial. But, you know, that's an example to me of where it's very important that community members are paying attention to all of these discussions, you know, keeping an eye on these ethical dilemmas as they come up.
I really have, major ambivalence about this topic because, in one sense, I absolutely 100% agree with what Jeremiah said, that we need to move beyond community engagement to community leadership. And it makes me think of that, you know, kind of cliche where they say, you know, diversity is being invited to the party, inclusion is, you know, being asked to dance. And even that I don't like. I think it would be more inclusion is part of the, you know, committee that planned the party. But on the other hand, as you mentioned, Stacey, it is true that there's this strange push-pull. CAB members need to provide this input. We need to hear from the community, but we're not devoting the resources necessarily for people to have the context that they need to be able to give meaningful input, you know, more than just checking a box. They reviewed it. They had no questions or they asked this. Some groups do a better job of providing resources and training for a layperson, but that provides enough information to share their thoughts in a manner that's tangible. But there seems to be so little balance. Either there's way too much, it's too technical, it's too much medical jargon, too many acronyms, and it doesn't make sense to someone who's not in that field, or it's so watered down, so diluted, third to fifth grade level summary that doesn't really give you the important nuances that you need. It's like either community is just kind of thrown in there without the proper tools and resources, or community's input is dumbed down to a checklist.
Right. So those are some of the continuing challenges with engaging communities in these complex trials. So let's highlight some of the issues coming down the pike, why trial design is changing, and what it means for community engagement. And let's keep in mind that everything we're discussing here is just a snapshot. It's going to continue to change and evolve. So here's the snapshot. As prevention research has progressed over the years, we've been able to add new options to the prevention toolbox. There's voluntary medical male circumcision. It's effective in reducing men's risk. Now we also have oral PrEP, which works if you take it. All this is great news, but it makes testing new products more challenging, especially as HIV prevention and treatment gets better and better and incidence of new infection declines. But adding new options to that prevention toolbox is still essential, as no one method works for everyone. For example, oral PrEP works very well biologically, but doesn't always fit into someone's life. Hence, the ongoing search for more choices. What all this means is that trials may need to be perhaps larger, perhaps longer, perhaps more costly, or all three to get enough data, or else devise new designs, such as only enrolling people for whom the existing products don't work well, sometimes referred to as addressing the unmet need, or testing more than one new thing in the same study. Again, these are just a few examples of how complex trial design may become. Stakeholder engagement's going to be equally complex. Stacey, I've heard you say this is a fundamental issue that will most likely impact the entire future of trial design and community engagement.
For me, I think that there's a real opportunity here because there are specific questions the research team need to have answered by community. This is a unique opportunity where there is a very clear-cut role for community, and researchers are recognizing that they need quote-unquote community input.
Tell us, what are those questions researchers can't answer on their own, the ones that are essential to hear from community stakeholders? What are those?
It's this issue of, as if they design one of these very complex protocols where, for instance, there's going to be, you know, a screening of potential participants to see if the current set of prevention options that is available, e.g. oral PrEP, works for them or not. And if it doesn't work for them, then they get enrolled in a placebo-controlled trial. To me, it seemed like that would be a preference, because the classic randomized placebo-controlled trial is the gold standard, the clearest way to get efficacy results. But whether or not you can identify this population for whom, for instance, oral PrEP doesn't work, it's complex design-wise, but it's also ethically complex. I mean, there are a lot of issues that we don't have clarity around, even in conduct of current trials, you know, around kind of how is the standard package of HIV prevention being offered to potential participants. And so what researchers want to know is, if we come to your community and try to implement a trial like this, is it going to fly? I mean, even after it's been sort of approved by, review boards, regulators, ethics boards, is it going to get shut down?
So let me ask the three of you. Obviously, this isn't a straight yes or no. This question is going to involve a process. What are your first thoughts on challenges, opportunities, obligation, burdens this raises for advocates, for the three of you?
We need to really get ahead of this. So those of us who can act as sort of translators for some of these complex concepts to a broader community of advocates who are going to be interested in this one way or another, both to help foster their understanding of the topic, but also to ensure that they're aware of the different risks of some of these new solutions that are being proposed. It's really important that we're getting ahead of this and that we're helping to get community members into a room to have a complex discussion about this, because it's not simple. There's a lot of gray area. But on the other hand, just bringing up some of those fraught questions, I think, would cause a lot of more conservative community members to say, no, let's not do that. But also, we know that oral TDF-FTC doesn't work for everybody. We know that we need a vaccine. We know that we need microbicides, that people need choice. And so we need to help community members understand how to have that balanced discussion, that nuanced discussion about these ethical tensions, to come up with something that works for everybody. And the last point I'll make is that the order of operations matters here. Because, you know, if you engage community after the fact, then it appears as though you are being manipulative. We see this all the time in HIV surveillance, for example. Right now in New York, for example, the topic of molecular surveillance is not nearly as controversial, because I think the health department has engaged with community very early in terms of talking about this issue of using molecular surveillance to sort of track the epidemic here, which could include some sort of inference of who infected who. But in other jurisdictions, that engagement has not been going on. It's been sort of that the health department is going to do this thing, and community, we need you to get on board. And there's a lot of mistrust going on right now. Same intervention, same sort of situation that you're talking about, but the order of operations matters, and you need to bring community on ahead of time. Otherwise, it might look like you are ethically compromised.
I think the points that Jeremiah made are key in terms of the order of operations, in terms of, are we truly supporting informed consent? It's not just a document. It's not just a process. It's not just something that's done so the IRB doesn't get mad. One additional thing is, I think that we can use some of the existing tools that we have more effectively. I think about social media, and I think about support groups and listservs. There are a number of people with a lot of good ideas or good questions or difficult answers to important questions who are not typically consulted. Those are the people we need to hear from the most.
Just to build very, very briefly on what Marina Kay was just saying, if everyone who's thinking about this issue of getting community input on trial design really kind of comes together, that's going to be the way to go. But if that doesn't happen, there's real cause for confusion at a minimum and potential controversy in the worst case scenario.
as we've heard, the discussion about the next generation of trial design will be evolving. But it's at a pivotal moment now. With trials of next-generation prevention products being designed simultaneously with oral PrEP programs expanding, the dapivirine vaginal ring under regulatory review, and multiple efficacy trials already enrolling and preparing for results and next steps. Although the issues will continue to evolve through the years, key discussions will be happening in 2019 amongst trialists, regulators, and funders to navigate this landscape. And it's more critical than ever for advocates, civil society, and community organizations to be part of the discussions and the decisions. You've been listening to PX Pulse, recorded at the studios of the Radio Foundation in New York City. Our theme music was composed by Alexi Stevens.